to Black White Mass Incarceration Show. I am your host, Sierra Cobb. Black White Mass Incarceration Show is a space that is used to uplift the unheard voices of the criminal and social justice issues that many face today. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoy.
Great. All right, ladies. Well, thank you for being on Black Light Mass Incarceration Show. We are a podcast that likes to uplift and highlight different things of the carceral system and also inform people how we all can change the carceral system and help make a better system for all and a fair system for all. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Katie and Rachel, and they would just going to tell us about what they do out there in California. They have a lot of wonderful things going on. So I don't know who wants to go first, but go ahead.
Sure, I can go first. It's Kate. I'm Kate Fagan. I'm the director of our program. Oh, and you can kick out my Potter pilot if you need to. I'll start that over. I'm Kate Fagan. I'm the director of the Prison Monastery for Unconditional Freedom. And our goal is to turn prisons into monasteries, which I think is something that sounds really radical and wild. But what it really is a way to go back to a more dignified, contemplative, thoughtful way of incarceration. So, you know, we believe that we've gotten really lost in our carceral system now. And the way that we incarcerate people is inhumane and it's dehumanizing. And most of all, it's a missed opportunity for a humanizing experience. And that's what the prison monastery is. It's a way to humanize both for the entire ecosystem of the prison, both for the incarcerated residents and for the correctional officers who are also dehumanized by the way that we do corrections.
So tell us how you came up with just the idea of the prison Montessori.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's evolved over time, but, you know, I've worked in corrections for almost 18 years now, and I've always worked for the correctional institutions in admin roles. So my last role was a, you know, director of prison programming, and I was very, very uncomfortable in those roles, very, very uncomfortable with the language that was being used, the way that people viewed one another in that ecosystem, the adversarial positioning that was happening, and the dehumanizing behavior. So I have, you know, I'm a psychotherapist as well. And so I've been thinking a lot over the years about how we could change the system and make it better. And then about 3-4 years ago, I met Unconditional Freedom, who I work for now, but they came into the jail where I was running programs and asked if they could run this program called the Prison Monastery. And I was really intrigued and, you know, had them kind of pitch it to me and had them help me understand what their goals were. And we were so deeply aligned in our goals that it was exciting and kind of astonishing because I was this one woman in this huge system just trying to change the culture and the language and everything we were doing. And here comes this nonprofit that wants to do all those things too. And so I brought them in. We did a pilot program at where I was working, and you know, we ended up wanting to expand it to the largest women's prison in the world, Central California Women's Facility. And so I ended up leaving my post working for the jail and went over to Unconditional Freedom to run the prison monastery at Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla, California, which, you know, is notorious for being a security challenged place with a lot of problems. And that's why we chose it. We really wanted to show that this can work even in a place that it has a lot of violence and a lot of security issues.
So what, so tell us, how has this program changed some of the facilities in California? Like what big difference have you seen?
Yeah. So in our first pilot, we were able to really change the entire culture at the jail. It was a 300 bed facility. And we were able to impact the, like I said, the language that was being spoken, you know, the labels that were being used, the way that people were internalizing those labels. You know, we really like flipped that on its head. We started a beautiful garden, organic garden there. We started yoga and meditation classes. We built a chicken coop and started raising chickens. We were cooking the food that we were growing. And there was a tremendous amount of pride and dignity that started to spread in the facility. And I'm not just talking about the incarcerated people. It was also, you know, we worked with the correctional officers on the way they see their role in this system and the way that they can move in a different direction in order to be a part of healing, restoration, see themselves as a community builder rather than a punisher.
So, and I think that's really, really important that they understand that you don't have to be the punisher, that really you're there to help these people understand who they are, because a lot of people who come into prison don't understand who they are. And so having support from a correctional officer is extremely important in making them feel like that they're humanized, helping them, you know, rehabilitate is extremely important. And that's one thing I think that really stuck out when I looked at the website is, you know, the guard to guardian, understanding that it's okay to have a relationship, changing the narrative of, you know, it's them versus us and us versus them. And, you know, you're a lover of them if you support them and, you know, you see the abilities that they have, because sometimes, let's face it, being in prison actually helps you see things that you might not would have seen on the street. And so having that support, like they do in Norway, they do the same thing in Norway where the correctional officers are supportive. They have connected relationships. It's not, you know, looking at them like, oh, well, basically labeling them from what the state has labeled them. They look at them like they're human. And so that's really important. And it makes their job a lot easier. You know what I mean? If they all can, you know, have a connective relationship, it makes their job easier, because I don't think people understand that a lot of correctional officers are stressed out. They have a high rate of suicide and PTSD, you know, on top of whatever they have going on outside of corrections. And then you come in corrections and it's violence all the time and, you know, having to be stringent and be one way, and instead of it being a welcoming environment, which, you know, people look at it like, well, it's not supposed to be a welcoming environment. It's about, you know, I guess showing them that what they're doing is wrong, which is true, but you got, it can also be a welcome environment without being so harsh. Because when you're harsh, that doesn't help them rehabilitate. That just makes them recidivize and they're coming right back in and taking that trauma that they had before prison, during prison, back out to the streets, which caused them to recidivize and come right back in. So I think that that's really important. And that's one thing that I really tried to push here in North Carolina was you have to change the culture. You see why you don't have employees? It's because of the old culture that had been taught that you have to be pungent and stringent towards these people because they committed a crime. And you have a lot of people who really didn't even commit a crime. They're there because they were falsely accused. So you can't look at everybody the same. And now we're in this generation where these kids are like, I'm not down for that. I'm not treating them like they're inhumane. I'm not, you know, going to be just hard on them. And so that's why a lot of them leave. That's why we have a high turnaround rate. Like now, the prison that my husband's at, they have nobody. The only people that are there are like lieutenants and sergeants. Like regular correctional officers are not even coming in. That's how bad it is. Because they say that, you know, they really try to support them, but then when they try to support them, they get that look like you shouldn't be supporting them, you know, and just the language that they use, and they just don't like it. So I think that's really important. Rachel, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I really love how you're talking about the wider relationship, like not just the direct, you know, crime and punishment of the person involved, but also the guards and everybody who goes into the system. It's not just the person who has become incarcerated, but everybody is affected. And then also, like, not the, you know, the culture is really changing. It's really asking for something more, like almost demanding. It's not just asking now. I think the culture is like demanding something more. And I think we might have got ahead of it a little bit with unconditional freedom. Like we might be some of the first out of the gate with looking at what's possible in terms of, and we say this thing, or at least this is one of the things I love about our program is there's just such a, no matter what area of the program you're contributing or working in, I personally contribute in the volunteer portion of the program. Like we have a letter writing program that I'm part of. I have been a volunteer for the last 3 years, and there's just such I don't quite know what the right word is, but an equating, you know, there's just such a leveling of human to human inside all aspects of what we're creating which is really key, which was really key for me, without condoning crime. It's not about like saying it's good or bad. It's actually the opposite. It's about connecting on a human level and looking at what actually wants to happen for the benefit of all. Like what actually wants to happen for the benefit of the person incarcerated? What actually wants to happen for the guards that take care of this? What actually wants to work for the system administrators? What actually wants to happen in the community? What actually wants to happen in families and society as well? And I think what we've been working on is really touching on those things, and at the very least exploring what that could look like.
I think that's important, to connect the community with incarceration, because we've, for so many years, we've disconnected, like, oh, well, you know, they committed this crime, they're just a bad group of people and you should stay away from them. And so that's why a lot of people are not informed of how directly incarceration affects people on a day-to-day basis. So it's important connecting the community with incarceration to get a better understanding that not everybody that's incarcerated, you know, has this label that we have to label them as and look at them as, that it's, they're human just like we are, and we all make mistakes. Some get caught for it, some don't. And so just being able to help people understand that is important. And that's another reason why I brought this podcast on, was to start informing people, to get them connected, to kind of understand that, you know, we've been blinded and brainwashed about incarceration and people that commit crimes. And a lot of the things that we have been told is not true. And so it's changing the narrative now and helping people to understand and helping people to connect, to help people, because a lot of people are traumatized. It's the reason why they end up in prison. It's not just because they want to go commit a crime. It's because they are genuinely traumatized, whether it's, you know, generational trauma, child trauma, trauma as an adult. Everybody has some type of trauma, and a lot of people don't know how, where to even begin to heal. So if we all can start teaching people how to begin to heal, then that keeps us away from incarceration. And that's what my organization also wants to do, is work on holistic mental health and self-regulation, so that, you know, if you're not around your counselor or your psychologist, or you don't have health care, that you're able to self-regulate your own mental health. Because even when you're not in front, if you have them and you're not in front of them and something happens, you still have to be able to control your anxiety and get it under control and do, you know, your breathing, your meditation, your yoga, so that you can make conscious decisions. Because once your brain goes offline, then that's when you cannot make any, your decision making is poor. And so, you know, always trying to keep your brain online, and even practicing these exercises while you're not in a panic state. So that way, when you get in the panic state, then you're able to better control it. You're able to keep your brain online. You know, breathing is a very good thing. Stretching and breathing together is amazing. I don't think a lot of people understand how good that is. I suffer from complex PTSD, and I had to control my own because it manifested into seizures. And so really breathing, stretching, and exercising, and trauma release exercises is what really helped me. So tell us about, Kate or Rachel, tell us about the Pen Pal program that you have, which I think is amazing. That's another way to connect the community with people incarcerated.
Do you want to do that, Kate, or shall I?
Well, I'll start and then maybe fill in. So we have a couple of, you know, curriculum focused programs, and one of them is the Art of Soul Making. And the Art of Soul Making is about really awakening your inner life, kind of finding your identity, figuring out who you are, what your values are, how you contribute uniquely and beautifully to the world. And it's about, like you said, it's about connection. So it's about, you know, we believe that people are safer. All of us are safer if incarcerated people come out feeling more connected than when they went in, right? Like more connected and plugged into their communities, to the world. Someone who feels like nobody cares about them and there aren't any, isn't anyone out there who really sees them as a human being, that's a recipe for disaster. And so we really want to see people coming out feeling deeply connected and that they have a sense of purpose and that their identity is strong. And so that's what the Art of Soul Making is about. And the beautiful thing about it is that we can do that program in person. It's peer led. We can train facilitators, peer facilitators to lead the groups, but we can also do it as a correspondence program. So that's where the letter writing comes in. There's, you know, this 8-week curriculum and people go through one lesson at a time. And then they write to their pen pal about what is coming up for them during this lesson. And then the pen pal is also doing the 8-week program on the outside. And they feel like they can relate to one another. They feel like they connect over these lessons. And it's a really beautiful and profound experience on both sides. Did you want to add something, Rachel?
It was just the point, just to reiterate the point that you made about it being on both sides. Like one of the things I personally found as a pen pal starting out was a feeling of, well, first of all, I was like, I'm going to do some good. You know, it's that kind of like savior, kind of a savior, but, you know, good intentioned volunteer, you know, to try and do some good. And I'm gonna, you know, I'd read through the program and it was just such a brilliant piece of like almost like a, it's almost like a guide for life. It's like almost like a lifestyle practice, the program itself, with and so I was like, oh, I can't wait to share my knowledge, you know, or like tell my pen pal all about this in a sort of like me and them. And the actual experience of it is nothing like that. It's more, it first of all, me and them falls apart. You're just human to human. And then this human in particular, in my experience, incarcerated, has so much wisdom just merely through living the experience that they're inside of. It's just a natural, like in every moment I've felt like I'm the one being taught, and then the program itself is works both when I go through the quest the integration questions, when I take a look at how it's impacting me, and then we're sharing that. It's just not what I expected at all, and it's like growth for it. I've experienced it as personal, tremendous personal growth, along with tremendous connection and learning from someone that I would never have run into in my everyday life, and now I get to gain that wealth inside this program. So.
Yeah, that's extremely important, and I like that because it's fixing two people because you never know what the pen pal is going through on the outside. I mean, it's a lot going on out here, and so them being able to share, their connection and what they're both going through and be able to lean on one another, I think is amazing. And then that just gives them a further insight that, hey, this person is not, what they say they are, and they're smart and they're creative and. I like that. I think that's really important. I like that a lot. So I know that I see on y'all's website that you also do free food and that it's healthy. Let's talk about that because food in prison is absolutely horrible. That's another reason why, mental health also has to do with what you put in your body. And that's why a lot of people have health problems, diabetes, and everything because of all the heavy preservative food that they give them. A lot of the food's not even real. And I know that was one thing that I was trying to work on. I know Impact Justice works on that as well, because that's another major thing that really impacts them and takes years off their life is the food that they serve them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean it's a crisis, and it's systemic oppression. The people walk out of prison or jail with health conditions, right? Taking lots of medications that they feel like they are going to depend on, and so just creates even more dependence, and it's financial obligations as well. Not and you mentioned mental health issues. It's a huge issue, and we really believe that not only if people grow cook healthy food, learn how to cook healthy food, and eat healthy food, but also have a connection, like a personal connection with their food. So they're growing the food themselves, they're feeling proud of what they've grown. So there's of course these concrete skills that are learned, but also it's a spiritual connection when you like plant the seeds and grow the food and harvest it yourself. It's a profoundly spiritual experience, we believe. And so that's a huge part of the prison monastery that cannot be overlooked, that we have to change the way we feed people in incarceration. And also, we believe that it can be financially beneficial for the institutions to do this. It cuts down on their medical costs and the mental health costs, like you said, and it also, has people feeling like they have a purpose. They're growing food and they're cooking food themselves. And so, depending on your location, it can be done in a variety of ways. So at it in Northern California, where we were at the jail, we happened to have, 3 acres of land to be able to grow food on. At Central California Women's Facility, we were almost given a big soccer field to work on. Unfortunately, there's some serious water issues there, but that was something that we were, prepared to try and workshop and figure out. In New York, where we're headed next, we're talking about hydroponic gardening or tower gardening. because it's New York City, it's in Harlem, so there's not going to be any land for us to grow on, but we have to figure out how to grow our own food because that's part of the prison monastery. So we're kind of trying to think outside the box for our next project and figure out how to keep that integral part of our whole ecosystem.
Yeah, and that's important because it's also an eco-economic system as well. You know, the things that they are feeding them. I know that a few of our prisons have farms, but from what I've heard, there's sewage coming up from one of the farms. A lot of the equipment is outdated. And so, you know, it's a climate thing as well. So I think it's important to be able to grow your own food and making sure that you're getting all the right nutrition. Because it's hard to get any type of good nutrition in prison. So I really like that, you know, that you are, and then it's teaching them a skill. I mean, they can come out and be farmers, and then just being able to see the fresh vegetation and that scenery itself can make them feel 10 times more better. You know, just a change of scenery makes you feel a lot better. So I think that's important. Rachel, you have anything you want to add on that?
What I was thinking about when you guys were talking, I was remembering an experience that I had once. I think it was at the beginning of the program. I might have visited one of the jails or prisons we were working in, and I was helping one of the leads in the program dig the ground for the garden. And I honestly, again, I was having that experience of I'm gonna go and do good. And what really happened was I got my hands in the soil and I was like, holy cow, like I do not do this. Like I don't connect to the soil. I don't connect to what nourishes me. I don't connect to nature. And I have the freedom to do it. And then I was like, so how, you know, this is just incredible what we're actually doing. And it was so simple. I had no idea that that feeling of the soil or putting my hands in it or just realizing how little I make time for it, really nourished me. And so I felt like we were creating access to something that could really, really help. And then there's just something incredible about the process of growing your own food and then eating it. It's like realizing your potential as a human being or something. I don't know. Like it's like the most basic thing, but such a skill and such a like self-reliance thing that has you or has me it has me it's had me feel more confident just in myself, like, oh, I can actually do that, feed myself and nourish myself, and which seems kind of silly because there's so many ways to do it, but this particular way and this particular skill that we're sharing and involved in has me feel a confidence.
And it's another form of therapy. Like gardening could be another form of therapy. Like people don't understand that, you know?
I learned about earthing. I did not know this was a thing. Have you heard of that, Sierra? Where you take, oh, of course. It's just me then. I'm learning. Like just a simple thing of taking my socks and shoes off and walking in the grass, like, and the what drains out of me is really quite incredible.
Your body is meant to connect with nature a lot, and that's, you know, it's another thing of, it's another form of mindfulness actually. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I forgot to mention that we also were keeping bees together. We learned beekeeping at the Northern California pilot that we did. And that was really beautiful because not only, again, as you mentioned, it's a skill that they can it transfer to the outside and actually, you know, in Central California, there are lots of beekeeping jobs. Not only that, but it's this reverent, beautiful, reciprocal relationship with these bees. They learn to tenderly care for another being, not learn to, but they get the opportunity to, and which is just creates this softening and humanizing again. And then the other thing I wanted to just circle back to is that idea of connection to food and how that relates to climate change. You know, I think that there's a lot of hopelessness everywhere, but in the carceral state, there's even more. And so the more opportunities we can provide for feeling like there's something we can do, you know, we can learn, we can educate ourselves about what's happening in the world, and then we can do something about it. And that's part of that contribution that we feel like is so essential to the prison monastery. And so we started teaching about ecosystem restoration to the incarcerated, and we had some really high level people like John Liu, who's done many, many ecosystem restorations across the world and transformed these barren spaces into lush, beautiful ecosystems. Most famously, the Les Plateau in China. And so we had him come and he volunteered to speak about ecosystem restoration. And we started working on a plan that was relevant to our community, which was forest fire devastation, working on reforesting or repopulating the forest in our area. But of course, for each prison monastery, it would be different to the individual unique ecosystem that's there. But it's an incredibly empowering experience to be locked up and know that, like, okay, I'm doing something about climate change right now. Like, I'm doing something about where I live and the devastation that's happening. Because as you know, incarcerated people sometimes just have this desperate feeling of like, I wish I could be doing something, right? Like, I wish I could be out there contributing in some way. And so we really feel like it's essential to create those opportunities while inside.
Yeah. And I think that's important. It also shows that anybody can be rehabilitated as well. You know, it doesn't take a lot. It just takes a little. And just giving that person the door or the direction to start rehabilitation is extremely important. And I like the way that you guys are doing that in all aspects, the guards, the food, pen pal, and then, you know, the yoga and meditation. So a question that I do have is, since y'all have, you know, been practicing all these things, has the violence went down in some of the prisons?
Yeah. So at the county jail where we were, we definitely saw way fewer security incidents. People were really, you know, mindful of what they were doing because they didn't want to be pulled off the beekeeping crew or the gardening crew. You know, that was really important to them. It created a sense of dignity and pride, and they really didn't want to lose it. And also they started to see themselves differently and carry themselves differently, and they became leaders back at the housing unit, you know, and they would just really, they started to change the culture. You know, we started in this little pod and then it just started to kind of ripple out. And so, you know, we have interviews of the correctional officers just noticing the change and the difference. And then we're working with them as well on changing their behavior. And so it just becomes this mutual exchange of just flipping the narrative completely. I think what you were saying earlier about like people coming in and the correctional officers saying like, okay, you're bad, you're a bad person. And so it's my job to punish you. And really what Guards to Guardian says is you're innately good. And my job is to bring that out within you.
Help you find that.
Yeah, help you find that, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're not going from this deficit mindset. We're coming from this abundance mindset. And so the same thing happened at Central California Women's Facility. It was funny because when we toured the place for the first time, we totally had the backing of the warden. But one of the officers that was kind of lower ranking was in charge of giving us the tour. And you could tell he was really skeptical. And he was just like, yeah, I don't know about this. He's like, well, they have to earn it. Like, they have to work up to it and earn it, right? And he's like, why do you want to go to this housing unit? They're like the worst behaved in this whole facility. And I said, well, because first of all, we believe that, you know, if we bring the abundance and the beauty and the richness, that people will recognize it within themselves and they will want to keep it and hold on to it, right? And stay there. And so I don't know if he really totally understood my message, but that is what happened. that like, you know, they had nothing. They had no programming. They had nothing in that housing unit. The walls were totally bare. It was completely sterile, wiped clean. And so when we come in with all this richness with art and meditation and yoga, and we're like, everybody gets a yoga mat, and we're, you know, like bring the abundance, they're just like they want to hold on to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they see that in themselves, and they're like, okay, I'm worthy of this. I'm gonna rise to it.
And then you're also giving them something to work towards as well, and make it feel like they're making their family proud of them, because a lot of them feel like they're just hopeless and that, you know, they're a failure and things of that nature. So as you said, them being able, they didn't want to get kicked off the B program, or, you know, being able to go out there and plant food because they actually had something to work towards. And I think that that's what a lot of facilities don't understand, or people who run the prisons don't understand, is when they have nothing to work towards, then of course that's what you're going to get is behavior problems, because they have nothing to do, you know, and they're just locked in a room, or, you know, in a dorm that's bare and it just is full of metal and things of that nature. So that depletes you as a person all the way around. If, you know, you're in an environment, like your environment is a major part of how you feel, how your emotions are regulated. And if you're not in a warm, cozy environment, you know, then you're going to have those problems. So I really like what you guys are doing. I think it's amazing. And I hope that other organizations in other states, you know, can start to kind of follow what you guys are doing. And that's what I've been saying for the longest, that, you know, mental health is extremely important. Like, that's the main thing that keeps a lot of people in prison, whether you, you know, are addicted to something, or whether you just can't regulate your emotions and you make bad decisions because your emotions aren't regulated, or because you don't feel like a person or a whole person, is what brings us to incarceration. And if we can change that, then you would have less people incarcerated. You know what I mean? And so I think that that's really important. And that's what we're trying to spread out here with our organization, is the same thing: art, meditation, yoga, nutrition. You know, if you can get, like, I think they should start letting them get supplements in there as well, because supplements does a lot. I take supplements, and that's what really helped me with my PTSD, was just taking supplements. And so you guys are amazing. I love it. Is there anything else that you guys would like to share with us before we go? Oh, you have a book too. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, we have a couple of books. We do have The Art of Soul Making for Prisons, and that's a workbook that, you know, incarcerated people use, you know, if they don't have access to the tablets. So we are on the Edovo tablets, which, oh gosh, I can't remember how many facilities they are in nationwide, but it's maybe 700. They're in a lot. And so if, you know, our listeners are in a facility with a contract with Edovo, they can access our programming. They just have to request it, and it's free. So it would be great, you know, to expand our reach through the tablets. It's just such a wonderful way to provide free programming for people. And we have a new book, our new addiction book, The Art of Addiction, which is really about, like we were talking about, that, like, you are innately good, rather than that kind of deficit model that some addiction programs have. It's really like, let's bring out your beauty and your purpose. And so that's we just published that book. You can find both of those books on Amazon. And let's see, definitely check out our website. We should have, you know, we rely on donations for the work that we do. So we have a link on our website to donate. And I think Rachel might have a link that you could possibly put in the show notes if you wanted to, for donations. We are gearing up to go to Harlem and do the prison monastery there. We're so excited. And yeah, like I just, it's a dream. I cannot believe it. So, yeah, we're going to go do the prison monastery in Harlem, New York. And, I'm a PhD candidate. I'm working on my PhD. And so I'm also, doing research along the way. So I'm, studying our programs, doing qualitative research. So I just finished a study last summer on our addiction program with some really beautiful results. And then I'll be studying our Art of Soul Making program, starting in May. So lots of papers to publish and writing to do. So yeah, if folks want, are looking for writing, we've got lots of beautiful stories as well.
Rachel, anything you want to add?
Oh, I think Kate hit the nail on the head. I will definitely share all of the links. I'll share the links for the books and the website, and then volunteering. There's so many ways to volunteer or get involved with unconditional freedom. You can become a pen, you can volunteer to be a pen pal, you can volunteer to go to any of our free food locations. We do free food in various locations across the country. Not in the prisons, to volunteer in the prisons, but in different locations just as a program. And yeah, I think that's it. If anyone is interested, then we would love to hear from you and see how we can get as many people involved as we can in whatever way people want to be involved.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important to you guys. Definitely check out their website. It's amazing. And I think you also have where if you know somebody else wanted to do the free food program, you would give them the templates and things. So if anybody else wants to be a part of the free food program where they go into different communities and give healthy, fresh food and partner with different farms, definitely check out their website. They have a link for that. And so, yeah, I thank you guys so much. Thank you for doing this work. It's very hard work, but you guys are changing it with stride and changing the narrative that needs to be changed. And stay in touch. Definitely, we'll put all that information in the show notes. And like I said, reach out to them. Please go look at their website. It's amazing. Thank you, two ladies, for all you do. You're doing great work, great, amazing work.
Thank you, Sierra.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye. Bye.